Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Take a walk on that wild side here in this fourth and final hour. Hang out with me and Bobby Hebert. I'm Christian Garrick. Mark Menard at Master Control. Coming up, Regis Progre, professional boxer, will join us. Big fight coming up this weekend.
Rugaru!
Over there at the Lakefront Arena.
Yes, Lakefront Arena. Christian, this is Saturday night at UNO Lakefront Arena against Juan Jose Velasco, if I'm pronouncing that right. Mm-hmm. He's from Argentina. The WBC super lightweight. Now think about this. This is super lightweight. This is on ESPN, 140 pounds. He's considered, that being Progre, Rugaru, his homeboy, is considered the top 140-pound fighter in the world.
Wow.
Not Louisiana, not the United States, in the world. He holds the number one ranking right now in the division. You've heard of this. You follow Ring Magazine, mm-hmm. as well as ESPN. So, no, this is going to be a big-time event coming to the UNO Lakefront Arena come Saturday night, Christian.
And look, what's unfortunate about the sport of boxing has just faded away. You know, I mean, growing up, I grew up in the Tyson era, you know, when Tyson was had the heavyweight champ, got beat by Buster Douglas, and then George Foreman, Evander Holyfield. I mean, that was the time where I think boxing, going back to Frazier, Ali, and all that, I mean, that was a stretch there.
And the thing is, you know what's a shame with that? Because you look at New Orleans and the history mm-hmm. of boxing. I'm talking about even bare knuckle. You look at New Orleans as one of the birthplace of boxing. You got to go 1870. Christian, think how long ago.
It's a great sport, especially for down here. Like, this is the perfect venue. This is the perfect city to host that.
Well, the fight between Jim Mace and Tom Allen being called the first heavyweight championship fight of the bare knuckle era. I want to say if you go right there in Kenner on the riverfront, they got a statue mm-hmm. Of that event. So there's a lot of history in boxing here in New Orleans. You look at Progre's 21-0. Christian, I just think if you're a local sports fan who wants to see the best of the best and who's representing New Orleans and representing Louisiana, and go support them because this is going to be on ESPN. This is not no shady little back alley event. I mean, the bottom line is, Christian, Rugaru, Regis Progre, he knocks out people. He's been in a tear in the past five fights. He is going to combine 10 rounds with three wins by knockouts and two by technical knockouts. Now, the gentleman he's fighting, you know, Christian, I think from Argentina, it'd be interesting to see, you know, because he has not fought away from home.
Right.
And he's coming to Rugaru's backyard, so
140 pounds. These guys are lightning quick and powerful. Lightning quick. That's one of the things I like about the featherweights or super featherweight, super lightweight championship, because you're going to see some serious speed and power.
Well, you look at like a 140-pound man. They're so ripped. They're so toned. But you talk about the speed. Yeah, you're going to see that, Christian. That individual could be fighting a guy that probably weighs 50, 60 pounds more than them and can hit him like two, three, four times mm-hmm. before even you would hit him. And I think you have that in Rugaru.
Regis Progre joins us next here on Sports Talk on WWLAMFM.com. Getting back to our list of top 28 most exciting between LSU and the Saints in terms of games. Bobby Hebert, Christian Garrick waiting on Regis Progre, professional boxer, big fight this weekend in the UNO Lakefront Arena. At 18 on the list, the Steelers and Saints, December 23rd, 2 days before Christmas, 3:25 kickoff. And every 4 years, the Saints and Steelers usually tangle in pretty interesting games. The Saints have won 3 out of 4 against them.
Well, if I can recall, man, I think it was a very entertaining game. Probably the most impressive win, I want to say, in the Superdome on Sunday night, when the Saints were able to come away with a win in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm. And Lance Moore had a really good game that game.
And then also at Pittsburgh, I want to say we scored over 40-some points. See, you think about Pittsburgh, the Steelers are not the steel curtain anymore. They're an offensive team.
Mm-hmm.
They might have arguably the best receiver, running back, top five quarterback. So, I can remember Drew Brees having an unbelievable game. We exploited them in Pittsburgh, scored over 40 points, and then coming away with a win, I want to say, was Sunday Night Football against Pittsburgh.
So well, that 06 matchup, that was when you saw the double reverse with Reggie, that big leap. Remember that leap?
So, wait, do you have it before you? So, when did we play? I don't think it was even that far. I'm talking about it more recent.
They lost to him in Heinz Field. The last trip they made to Heinz Field, they lost. No, the Saints ended up winning. They survived a furious comeback. Remember, they had,
no, we scored 40-some points, yeah. And the Steelers tried to come back.
Yeah, Kenny Vaccaro intercepted it. Yeah. Passed in the end zone, and kind of ended.
That's what I'm saying. To me, the last two times we played Pittsburgh, no Steelers fans, there's a lot of them in Louisiana.
They had to
be frustrated because the Saints scored, like I say, 40-some points on the road, and then they won Sunday Night Football, even though they might have had a disappointed season. Was that 13? I don't know.
I think that was 2010.
When a Sunday night game?
Yes, that was 2010, because they play that division 10, 14, and 18, and 22.
Well, that game was, I remember.
It was 2010.
That it was kind of a disappointing season, but that was the most impressive win.
Okay, now you're talking about 2014.
Yes.
Okay, now you're talking about 2014.
Sunday night.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on, Christian, help me out.
Well, yeah, I know which one you're talking about.
Okay.
I didn't hear you say the disappointing season, but ultimately they ended up scoring a bunch of points and winning on Sunday Night Football. I remember that game.
Right, and the Steelers were legit. So you look at, and the Steelers are still legit. So that game, 2 days before Christmas, Christian, that can't be flex. You know how you think it flex?
Right.
It's 325 CBS. CBS is not giving up that
nope.
game. And that'll be a game that, I mean, who knows, could be playoff implications. I mean, I still think when that's going to come about, both the Saints and the Steelers could be in the playoffs, but you're playing for something because of seeding. You could possibly be playing for, you want to be a top seed, number one or two seed.
The week prior, it comes in at 16, Saints at Panthers, Monday Night Football affair. The first shot at New Orleans for the Panthers. Remember, they play them in almost two out of the final three ball games, right? The only thing that separates them is that Steelers game. So I have them 16 on the list. December 17th, Monday Night Football, Saints at the Panthers.
Well,
considering this is the first time they'll play, too, since the Saints swept them in three tries last year.
Well, you have to win one of those games. And I'm going to be realistic because I think Carolina is that good. That whether it's at Carolina or the last game, December the 30th at home in the Dome. Now, my understanding, that could be noon, 3:25, or a flex game, depending on what occurs. You got to win one of those. But, Christian, this is something that I took in my notes and I'm just looking at now. When the schedule came out, now think about this scenario. I wrote down this in my notes. To me, the Saints could lose two of the last three games and still win double digits. And if not 10-6, could be 11-5.
So one to the Panthers and one to the Steelers.
Yes, and or you winning one out of the last three, but you still win double digits. You 10-6, if not 11-5. Now, think about this. Let's say you're having a great season. And all of a sudden, it comes down to the last three games, and you only win one of two. Now you're going into the playoffs. You're not a number one seed, but you still possibly could have a double-digit winning season, at best maybe 11-5. Come on, wouldn't you take that right now? Now you'd be disappointed because you always want to end the season on a high note. But again, you say limping. The Saints were the first team to do this.
At 09.
In 09, what did we do?
Lost the final three games.
Okay. Who dat? Lost the final three games. What happened?
Won a Super Bowl.
So the bottom line is, can you get the double-digit wins? But I don't know this year if that would be enough to only have 10 or 11 wins double digits, even though you wouldn't end on a high note. Because I think this year, more than any time under Sean Payton and Drew Brees, you have to have the number one seed, at worst, number two, and that might take 12 or 13 wins, simply because I think that formula with Philadelphia did last year was a big part of them getting to the Super Bowl. So in other words, if you're looking at the Eagles or the Vikings, whoever it might be, can you force those teams to come to the Mercedes-Benz Superdome to continue in the playoffs versus you having to go win in a hostile environment on the road? Like I can tell you right now, I don't care if the Eagles are Super Bowl champs. We play the Eagles in New Orleans, we're going to beat the Eagles. Now up there, I don't think so. Now, the reason why I say that, and I look at the Vikings. Look at that game, how the Eagles whooped the Vikings. You know one thing? I know we might have not have won that game, but we'd have had a lot better showing than the Vikings offensively. But I know the Vikings defense is better than the Saints defense, and they got freaking torched.
They got lit up by the
Colts. Yeah. And they have stud safeties and all that. So that's why I'm saying.
Well, I think the Saints should.
It would make a difference to play in New Orleans versus Philadelphia. I'm not saying you couldn't win in Philadelphia, but how that game unfolded against the Vikings, for us to win, it would have been a shootout type game, and the offense would have to hang with the Eagles, how productive they were.
Well, you remember that second half comeback for the Saints in the divisional round against the Minnesota Vikings. I think they showed the Eagles a little bit about, hey, this is the blueprint. If you're going to have success against the Minnesota Vikings, this is what you're going to have to do. And look, I think at that point, considering the game plan and Doug Peterson, who I'm highly fond of as a play caller.
Listen, you know when he parlayed that at the head coaching job? It was unbelievable with Doug Peterson and Frank Reich.
Mm-hmm.
They with Nick Foles. And I'm not saying it does matter who's the quarterback. But putting the quarterback in position to succeed, that's why Frank Reich got the head job with the Colts after the fact, because he was a big part of what they did from that position. So what does Mr. Earth say? Well, what is he thinking? Man, maybe Frank Reich might be able to do this with Andrew Luck.
Who's more talented than Nick Foles.
Yes. So I think that all came into play while Frank Reich was able to parlay that success into a head job with the Indianapolis Colts.
All right, our next game on the list at 15, Rams versus the Saints, 3:25 kickoff November 24th, a rematch of last year where, look, the Rams kind of took it to the Saints out there in L.A. Saints didn't have much going other than that Alvin Kamara run.
Without Alvin Kamara, wouldn't have been close. But, you know, and I said this over and over again, that's going to be key and critical for the Saints, those hidden yardage.
Yeah.
Now, not so much return. Pharoah Cooper, he was not only Pro Bowl but All Pro. That might have been Pharoah Cooper's best game of the year with those hen yardage.
Mm-hmm.
Christian, I don't know why this is burning my brain, but Pharoah Cooper, I want to say, had 178 return yardage, and the Saints had zero. What?
That's two touchdowns,
I don't care if you're playing in Los Angeles and the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. On the special teams, hen yardage, you cannot be.
That's two touchdowns.
178 to zero.
That's two touchdowns.
What?
100 yards.
No. And I know Sean Payton is well aware of that. And who could maybe be our Pharoah Cooper coming for training camp in the return game?
Kuyon and Morgan City, you're up next.
CBS News Update. President Trump had a stick in the eye for a longtime ally at the NATO meeting in Brussels.
Germany is totally controlled by Russia.
And in a tweet tonight, he referred to a German energy deal with Russia, saying pipeline dollars to Russia are not acceptable. CBS's Major Garrett.
President Trump and German Chancellor Angela Merkel exchanged pleasantries for the cameras during a one-on-one meeting. But Merkel, who grew up in communist East Germany, told reporters earlier, "I've experienced myself how a part of Germany was controlled by the Soviet Union," and said her country today made independent policies and independent decisions.
While not calling on the president to apologize, Illinois Democratic Senator Dick Durbin said Mr. Trump doesn't understand the NATO alliance.
What the president is doing is antagonizing our allies, and embracing our traditional enemies and foes.
CBS News Update, I'm Pam Coulter.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. Kuyon in Morgan City. What's going on, Kuyon? You're on WWL.
Hey, Kristen and Bobby, how y'all doing tonight?
Good, man.
Hey, Kuyon, what you got?
Good. How was your Creole tomato salad dressing I gave you the other day?
Oh,
made out of?
Oh, God. That's the best thing you can ever
Wait,
put
Wait, run
in
this
a
by
sandwich.
Me again?
Yes, he won on Tom Fitzmaurice's show. Kuyon, you have
oh,
to
yeah,
tell
yeah,
him.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And he gave me a jar of this stuff. You could do a free plug here, Kuyon, because that stuff is like you put it on anything.
Creole tomato mayonnaise? What is it?
Salad dressing.
Oh, salad dressing. Oh. Listen, you could put this between two slices of bread and don't have no meat. And just,
well, I love Creole tomato sandwiches that way.
No, listen, I dip anything into that. It tastes so good. I mean, Kuyon, thanks for that gift.
I need to bring y'all some more. But I wanted to call y'all last night. We were talking about players that were not drafted and how they done in the NFL.
Yeah.
Now, what about this? What about players that were drafted and they were cut and they couldn't make it? And like Pierre Thomas, they were late bloomers and they became something. They made something in of themselves. Now, I have one player in particular that was drafted in 1955 by the Pittsburgh Steelers out of Louisville, and they cut him. And he did not play one single down the year he was drafted. And he walked onto a team the following year, and he became a Hall of Famer. Do y'all know who I'm talking about?
No.
Johnny Unitas.
Johnny U.
Chris, you know how I know that? Because the Pittsburgh Steelers kept Jim Finks and cut Johnny Unitas.
Oh,
and I
right.
brought that up to him. I said, well, you know, Mr. Finks, I said, management does not always make the right decisions. For instance, when the Pittsburgh Steelers cut Johnny Unitas and kept you. Okay.
What did he say to that?
He went out and lit two cigarettes. He went like back to back. He was
chain
like,
smoke?
Oh, God. It like, no. And
this
the reason,
is during your contract dispute?
Yes. He was trying to attack me, and I was just keeping that in my back pocket. I said, well, you know, management don't always make the right decisions. And come on, Johnny
Unitas.
That's
juicy right there.
It speaks for itself what he did with the Colts.
Yeah.
So, Kuyon, I'm glad you brought that up.
Right. And, do y'all know of any other players that could have happened to? That's the only one I can think of.
I'm sure there's a few. I mean, you know, people talk about Tony Mandrich, right? Okay.
That would be a good project, though. But listen, a player gets cut from a team and goes to another team and really plays at a Hall of Fame level.
Well,
In
essence, though, Drew Brees was not actually cut, but come on, they didn't want to have anything to do with him. The Chargers said no.
Well, they had Philip Rivers.
I know, but there's an example for you.
But that's not an extreme example.
No, right.
You'd have to be out and out cut. Out and out cut, and then you go somewhere else and have success.
Well, what about Leroy Glover?
Well, explain that to me.
He was a draft pick with the Raiders, gets cut after 1 year, picked up in New Orleans, has 17 and a half sacks that year.
Well, that might be a great example, Christian, because I have to look more into that as far as his contract and what came about. But Leroy Glover, the best of the rest of a flat-out stud.
No, look, there was no contract issue in Oakland. They just flat-out cut him.
Oh, well, then Leroy Glover's a Johnny Unitas example on the defensive side. But Leroy Glover still has to make the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
He was a fifth-round pick in 1996. Fifth or sixth. I know he was a late-round pick. And then
Leroy Glover's a badass. What, are you
sure.
kidding me?
I mean, you put up 17 and a half sacks on the interior?
Yeah, on the interior, not defensive end. That's why we hope our interior guy, like Cedric Ellis, we all excited, where we drafted him out of USC, had six sacks. We hope Sheldon Rankins gets six sacks. Can you imagine six times three? Come on. What? From the interior? Then you know the Saints defense is kicking ass.
That was during the 2000 Who Let the Dogs Out defense.
Yes.
The heavy lunch bunch.
Norman
Hand and company and all them. That was Darren Howard on the outside. I think Joe Johnson was still on that
Joe
team
John,
at the time.
Yes.
That was a heck of a defensive front.
No, that was very stout, to say the least.
Jim Haslam knew how to build the defense at least that year, that's for sure. Kuyon, thanks for the phone
call. Jim Haslett was, I'm telling you, Jim Haslett was an outstanding coach. Jim Haslett knows football. You know what Jim Haslett's problem was? He was trying to be two buddies, friends with the players. You got to be a dick. You got to be a jerk. You got to be a jerk. You got to be where, listen, it's my way or the highway. You cannot be I've been a player. I know what you're going through. You cannot do that.
Another great example on the text line at 87870. Ninko, Rob Ninkovich, cut here in New Orleans. Look what he goes on and does. Now, he's not having a Hall of Fame career like Johnny Unitas.
Yeah, not pro, but still a Super Bowl winner.
Look at the success he had.
No, Sean Payton will tell you that's the number one mistake he did for a dozen years being the Saints coach. I can remember asking Coach Payton a question about Rob Ninkovich, and I said, wouldn't you maybe keep him because he also could be the backup deep snapper? Do you know he actually deep snapped in a preseason game against the Chiefs?
Yeah.
Was that legit? He can actually deep snap.
Well, but that's the thing, though. They were auditioning him more as a long snapper than they were as a pass rusher, as a defensive end.
And have him on special teams, yes.
Now, didn't he tear his knee his first year, though?
I want to say he tore his knee again in New Orleans and Miami. That I might be wrong with that, but I'm just thinking on the top of my head that might have occurred. But come on, his career with the Patriots speaks for itself. He married a West Bank girl. So New Orleans has been
friendly. That's a good example,
Ninko. New Orleans has been friendly to him.
Oh, yeah.
So, no, Rob Ninkovich is a great individual. You talk to him, he's not stuck up.
No. I mean, we talked to him at the Super Bowl in Indianapolis.
He's unbelievable.
You and I sat down with him.
He's a good dude.
He is. Totally humble. He's not the biggest guy in
the
world. No. I mean, I was sitting next to him. I'm like, man, he's not that big.
You know what you have to have, though? I'm telling you, the thing is you got to have instincts, a nose for the football, and you got to be able to run.
A little bit of grit, too.
Yeah, grit, and you got to be able to run, anticipate all that stuff. No, you're like, man, look at this dude. He must play football. Yeah, but if he's a slug, I mean, come on.
Good phone call, Kuyon. Got us talking a little bit. Getting back to our list of the top 28 games between LSU and the Saints. 16 games from New Orleans, and, of course, 12 for the Bayou Bengals. This is Sports Talk here on WWL. The Saints play the Cowboys. What used to be America's team to what is now America's team.
Well, listen, America's team, I guess 21st century more patriotic would be the Patriots versus the Cowgirls. The Cowgirls haven't won anything, but a significant win.
You get my point. I was just trying to troll the Cowboys.
Well, yes, a significant win in Saints history when the Houdat Nation was formed December the 10th, 2006 on Sunday Night Football prime time, and the Saints put a whooping on them 42-17.
Who was the hero the last time the Saints played the Cowboys, you remember? C.J. Spiller, the only play he made in a Saints uniform.
Yes, with that swing route.
On that wheel route.
In overtime.
In overtime to win it.
Yes, I do remember that.
I think it was 26-20, I want to say.
Well, the bottom line is the Saints won.
Right.
And listen, if we have, and I think we are getting to double-digit wins. So whether it's 10, 11, 12, 13 wins, one of those wins have to be against the Cowgirls on Thursday night.
They've had some pretty epic moments against the Cowboys, the Saints have. Remember in 2010, they played them when Malcolm Jenkins stripped, was it Dez Bryant?
Well, and helped out Reggie Bush.
Wait.
It was Malcolm Jenkins.
It was Malcolm Jenkins. I think it was
Thanksgiving Day,
Dez Bryant, yeah. I remember that game vividly just because I was sick as a dog. No, but I was sick as a dog for that game. Like, I had a stomach virus.
What, you had diarrhea or something?
I had, I don't know what I had. I had a really bad stomach virus. That, I remember that night, my dad came with me on the trip. I woke him up, and I'm like, Dad, I need help. I'll just give you a picture. I was on the toilet and also using the bathtub. All right, so it was bad.
So how did you go on the sideline? Did you plug yourself up?
No, I took some Imodium. They gave me some Imodium. Saints doctors
then
did.
You couldn't go to the bathroom for a whole week?
I don't need to get into all that, but the point being, anyway, Malcolm Jenkins with that strip.
No, he helped. Reggie Bush had that fumble, I want to say. Inside the red zone, and then, that was one of Malcolm Jenkins' best plays, maybe as a Saint, because the significance of that play.
Gave them the ball back to hit Lance Moore down the sideline.
Without a doubt, yeah.
That was a big moment for Saints and Cowboys. But, yeah, that's number 12 on our list. LSU at Florida, October 6th at noon. Gainesville for the second straight season because of that storm issue a couple years ago. This is a game that I think if LSU is going to go somewhere this year,
you got to win.
They have to steal this game.
Yes, you have to win even though it's on the road. I don't view Florida, obviously, as Georgia. You're looking at the SEC East or even Alabama. But this would be a game that, yeah, you have to win. When you're trying to get, I don't know, double-digit winning season, 9 wins, maybe going into a bowl game or get 10 wins, yeah, you have to win at Florida.
Looking at the Saints' schedule now at number 10, the first three games are against – it's a soft open, if you will. You consider Tampa Bay – you consider the Cleveland Browns, the New York Giants. Two out of those three teams had a top two picks in the draft. Tampa didn't do much. They had 5 wins a year ago. But then it gets tough real fast in the Atlanta Falcons. That's number 10, week 4, September 3rd.
Well, you got to split with Atlanta. Whether, you know, and obviously, I guess because it's prime time, you want to win on Thanksgiving night in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. So if we had to win one, I would think I would take that win Thanksgiving night versus September the 23rd at Atlanta. But it'd be great to sweep them. But that's why I still look at Atlanta, at New York in September, the first 5 games. I'll tell you what, if we're 3-2, I'd be disappointed. If the Saints are 4-1 or 5-0, that's the expectations. I think to get off to a great start. Before the you know the bye comes about, and then you got to go at Baltimore on October 21st. So, yeah, even though you lose to Atlanta at Atlanta, and you're 2-1 at that point, I'm not concerned. But the bottom line is, it's more important come Thanksgiving night that you win at home against the Falcons because you got to at least split.
Number 9 on our list of top 28 games between LSU and the Saints, Redskins. Versus the Saints, October 8th. Remember last year, that epic comeback they had against the Redskins?
Game.
And Kobe Fleener, for the first time, showed up in a Saints uniform. Alvin Kamara had that crazy juggling catch for a touchdown. That was a wild game.
Yeah, Drew Brees had one of those games that, boy, I'm glad we got Drew Brees.
Yeah.
Because that type of comeback, will it take that kind of effort? Now, Drew Brees might break the all-time record and surpass Peyton Manning on that night. Simply because his average, he's thrown over 300 yards a game. Drew Brees is going to have the record, whether it's the Redskins at home or at Baltimore or at Minnesota. You want it on a winning note so you can really celebrate. But we will not go to the month of November, and Drew Brees will not be the all-time passing leader. It will happen
before
November comes around.
Number 8, LSU at Auburn. You remember last year, they were trailing Auburn 20-0 in the second quarter, came back to beat Auburn, who was number 10 in the country. That was probably their signature win of 2017.
Oh, without a doubt, because, you know, punt return with Chark and all that and what it took. I think if LSU would have played Auburn 10 times, they might win maybe, you know, 2 or 3 times out of 10. But they'd only that one game, that's all that counts. So, I think that would be an upset if they win at Auburn. I'll look at that as a loss.
LSU, Texas A&M, November 24th. Jimbo Fisher, just because Jimbo Fisher playing against his former team that he used to be the offensive coordinator and perhaps could have been the coach in 2015.
Well, and I look at A&M, I mean, until they beat LSU, they got to prove it to me that they could beat LSU. LSU has had A&M's number, and I just think in the trenches, LSU's been able to manhandle them overall. And Jimbo Fisher or no Jimbo Fisher, A&M has to actually do it before I'm going to give them credit over LSU, whether it's at A&M or in Baton Rouge and it's at College Station. So, I don't know, they got to do it first before I'm going to give them credit.
Wrapping it up next here on Sports Talk with Bobby and Christian on WWL. All right, wrapping up our list here real quick. Number 6, Georgia versus LSU. It's been a while since the Dogs came to Baton Rouge, the runner-up a year ago, losing to Alabama. Falcons, Saints, Thanksgiving night, number 5, November 22nd, 7:20 kickoff. We talked about that one a little earlier as well. And, of course, Miami versus LSU at AT&T Stadium in Arlington. It's the opener. It's kind of the
right,
the
tone
setter.
To set the tone, exactly. Listen, I don't know – you got to win in the Cowboys Classic against the Hurricanes, or you got to beat Auburn. To say you're going to beat both of them, I think LSU fans will say, whoa, watch out for the Tigers this year.
If they do that. Number three, Saints and Vikings at Vikings on Monday night, or Sunday night. I don't need to say anything more. Just given by what happened last year. We know how.
So you think they're going to win? I don't.
No. I mean, okay. If I'm looking at that, no.
Okay, I thought. Okay. No. Yeah, because you can't be going 16-0, 15-1. I don't know.
Eagles.
Now, if we were playing in the Superdome, I'd say, yeah, we could beat the Vikings.
Eagles Saints at number two, November 18th, here in the
Superdome.
Are we
going to beat the Eagles?
Yeah.
Yeah, listen, I just think the dome field advantage going to make a difference, come November the 18th versus having to go to Philadelphia, them having to come to New Orleans.
Number one, it's LSU and Alabama. And look, I know Alabama has owned LSU, but it's still...
It's a new year.
It's a new year, and it's still, honestly, that's what LSU fans look forward to the most. Like you said earlier, if they get one against Bama, everybody's pretty much happy in Tiger Town.
Well, I think you got to be realistic. If you could just win one between, I think, Georgia, considering their expectations in the SEC East and being in a national championship last season.
You got some force in your
Yeah, tidbits. Can you beat just Georgia or Alabama in one of those games? Yeah, interesting tidbit, Christian, that not so much would occur on this day, but look at LSU, former LSU baseball players. Will make their first All-Star game appearance next week. Look at Aaron Nola. Now, look, Alex Bregman, World Series champs, but Aaron Nola is 11-2 with 2.4 ERA. His whip, now what is a whip, Christian?
Walks, hits, innings pitched.
Is 1.03, the fourth best mark in the National League. His 11 wins are also tied for the tops in the league. Has 116 strikeouts, which is sixth best in Major League Baseball. Then you look at Alex Bregman. Now he's right under 300, 284, 17 home runs, 51 RBIs and 29 doubles. So congratulations to Aaron Nola of the Phillies and Alex Bregman of the Astros to be a part of the All-Star game next week. Bon nuit, les gens. Good night, people. Who dat?
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.